Oh, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets program this afternoon. Here to take your calls is your old buddy, Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf, a 1985 grad of the Veterinary College at Cornell, an extensive background. God, he's been doing this a long time. He's not that old. He was very young when he started. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Now get in line early. Actually, the lines are loaded right now. So when you hear somebody hang up, that's your cue to call. You can also post your comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, or email voxpop@WAMC.org. But again, the number to call on this call-in program is 800-348-2551. Now, if you're sending us an email, remember, we can't ask follow-up questions. So include as much info on your pet as you can, the age, the sex, what type of pet. Obviously, dogs and cats are what we're talking about today. So if you got a pet rhino, it's not going to work out. Dr. Ron Scharf, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much, Ray. It's always such a pleasure to be here and to be following Commonwealth. It elevates our little Pets and Vets shooting match here to a great degree. But well, thanks a lot for your great welcome.
Well, the bar has been set very high by the Commonwealth Club, and we'll bring it down a notch, all right?
At least.
Well, the phone lines are loaded, so let's go right to the phones. And Molly in Woodstock. Molly, you're on first. Hi.
Yes, hello. I have a 10-year-old Rhodesian Ridgeback dog.
Okay.
And she has a fatty tumor all over her body, mostly on her stomach, I should say, and some on the outside of her leg. The veterinarian has told me to... It's his fatty tumor. She started to get them in March, and he said they are sort of benign things. But I wonder if you can tell me, is accurate? Also, do she can tell me, do they hurt her?
Huh.
Molly, do they...
If I'm being honest, Molly is my dog's name.
Oh. Well, we'll talk directly to your dog.
Yeah, I'm bypassing the middleman here.
I am Hannah.
Hannah. Okay, there you go. I was about to call you Molly again. So, Hannah, if they are fatty tumors, they're in general not to be worried about unless they're growing or they're on a place, like you said, some of them are on the legs. Well, the problem in the legs, if something does grow to the point that it needs to be removed, surgically, it's more of a challenge in an area on the body where there's less skin to close up after taking it off.
Yeah.
So if they're not growing, not as much of a worry. But you need to make sure that that's what they are. And you could do that by putting a needle in them just to make sure that they are the fatty tumors that we call lipomas. And if they're lipomas that are not growing, I agree. If they are lipomas that are growing, then on a limb, I would take it off sooner than later. And on the belly, like you say, where there's plenty of skin, then you could let it go 6 months and then measure it then compared to today.
And this is something for... I can't put a needle, correct?
No, don't do that.
Hannah.
Don't try this at home.
Okay.
Do not try this at home.
Yeah.
This is for a vet to do.
Okay. Hannah and Molly, thank you both for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, now, Rhodesian Ridgeback.
Yes.
We have a piece of furniture
Big
that.
Dog.
It's a very comfortable chair.
Big dog.
Oh, it's a dog. Oh.
It's a dog.
All right, let's go to Bill in Albany. Bill.
Yeah, hi, Ron.
Billy!
Dr. Scharf is my my veterinarian, and the reason I'm calling you, Ron, is, as you know, I'm moving from Albany to Wilmington, North Carolina. And so I was wondering if you could give me some advice as to the best way to transport my 2-11-year-old cats.
FedEx.
900 miles.
Oh, yeah, 900 miles. Well, Billy, you know, as my cousin, that you could call me at home and ask me the same question or come over.
Oh, you're related?
And, absolutely.
You know, no nepotism
on
the show. Billy, how could you?
He's threatened to do this many times.
All right, fine.
And I know he's got great cats, Billy being a golfer, Arnie, and he's named other cats similar names.
Chichi Rodriguez.
Not Chichi yet. Right. But so, Billy, it depends on how well they travel, and if they're difficult in a car, then there are medications that could chill them out. Basically, alprazolam. You could put them on Xanax, and that would be enough. And then sometimes you give another one, if, you know, 6 hours later or whatever, depending upon how they are. But I would not feed them before the trip, okay, so that if they do get a little nauseous, they don't have much in there. And if they do get nauseous when they're riding the car, I don't remember offhand without the medical, your medical chart in front of me, then there is also a medication that'll take care of car sickness.
What about traveling through a plane? I've heard some people do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's much better if they're in the cabin with you rather than in where you stow everyone's baggage, because it's real loud over there. They used to say it's not pressurized. That's not the case, I don't think. So it's not unsafe necessarily, but it is colder and it is louder. If you could put them in the cabin with you, then that might be tough. If you're going by yourself and you got two cats,
you can put a pet in the cabin with you?
Yes.
What airline do you fly?
If you could fit them under the chair, you can bring them.
So you're kidding me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So people do it.
Would you recommend flying over a car or a car over the flight? And the reason I'm asking is a flight will be a couple of hours and a car could be a full day's journey.
Yes.
Which one would you recommend?
If you could afford the flight with two cats in the cabin with you, then that would be faster and better.
Okay.
But on the other hand, if they decide to start vocalizing, it would be better for that to happen in a car than in a cabin full of people stuck with you.
You got that right. What about if somebody's allergic on the plane? What is this?
That's a good point. It's funny that if someone has a peanut allergy, no one on the plane can have peanuts. But if someone's got a cat allergy, no problem.
You know what, Bill? I think that this is a travesty, and I think you ought to take a boat.
Either that or just remain in Albany, okay.
All right. Hey, Bill, thanks a lot for the call.
Okay, I'm going to see you real soon, I think.
All right, Cousin Bill. Well, nice to have you on the program. Lisa in Montgomery. Lisa, you're on.
Hi, how are you guys? I have a two-part question. I am feeding a stray cat outside for about 2 years. When I first saw her 2 years ago, I thought perhaps somebody had trapped her already because her ear looked like it was cut. But then I realized when she brought her first litter to me, when they were already about 4 months old, that she obviously wasn't fixed. It was probably frostbite that took away her ear.
Oh.
So I ended up catching all four of her kittens, but I could never catch her. She seems to be able to go in the trap and never rest her body on the release. And I caught all four of them. Only one of them lived, even though they were 4 months old.
Wow.
They got very sick. They wouldn't eat. They had diarrhea. So three of them passed away. Now, the second year, she had a litter of three that she brought by. And once again, I tried catching her, couldn't catch her. Cat caught the other three kittens. Only one of them lived from that litter. Once again, they died, even though they were 4 months. They were so feral, I had to release the one back out, even though I had fixed him and I released him, but I still haven't gotten her. And now she's back at my door. It's freezing out. She's asking for food. I give her food. She's shaking from the cold. And I would really like to catch her this year before, I mean, I'm assuming she's pregnant already. She looks a little round. I'm kind of desperate to catch her. Is there something you could recommend that I could use other than the trap, or another way I could use the trap to get her in? And the other question is, was there something wrong with the kittens she's having, or did they just, being away from her at 4 months, I would think would be enough time, but they, you know, their help turned within 2 days and then they were gone. So
I agree with you. I think you're right, Lisa. First of all, I want to applaud your good deeds here. This is really great effort that you're doing trying to help these cats. Absolutely, if three out of the first four and two out of the second three litter died, then likely she's got something like feline leukemia or feline immunodeficiency virus, something she's passing along to the kittens, and they're not equipped to deal with the world. Their immune systems are off, and there could be other stuff too. Now, are you using...
Okay, wait, can I just interject that the one cat that lived a year ago, she was all tested, because she was placed with the Humane Society, and she didn't have any of that. She didn't have feline leukemia or AIDS.
Well, never mind then. You know, some of the shelters are no longer testing for both. They're testing for feline leukemia, and oftentimes they're starting. I've seen for a few years now, they're not testing for FIV. But if you say that they tested for the immunodeficiency virus, then there could be other things, Lisa. There could be feline infectious peritonitis, FIP. There's a million things that they surely do not test for. And I'm hoping that's a poor track record for me to think that she's not passing along some kind of pathogenic disease to those cats. Now, as far as mom, are you using Have a Heart Trap, Lisa?
Yeah, I'm using the middle one. You know, I'm thinking it's a Have a Heart Trap where, you know, the flap is up, and once they rest their body, that goes off. But I've literally watched this cat go in that trap and walk over that and then walk back out without touching it.
That's wild.
So she'll go in the trap and get the food and then walk out.
Well, they're supposed to snap that door shut, the one that she entered through that was in the open position, when they touch the pan that the food is on, and it's supposed to trigger that. And I'm wondering that some of these Have a Heart Traps, Lisa, could be very iffy. And if you don't set that trap just right, then it requires more force to close the door than that cat is putting on the pan. So it might be that you need a different trap, one that's more sensitive to touch, or one that's got an easier setting. You're supposed to slide one metal tab against another, but just barely, so that if she just barely touches that pan with the food, it snaps shut. So I'd look into getting either a better trap or a person that knows how to use them, and you'd be able to trap that cat. It would be hard for me to believe, Lisa, that you would not be able to.
Lisa, thanks a lot for the call. We'll take a short break here. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road, Colony. Locally owned seafood restaurant and raw bar, realseafoodco.com. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting their third annual evening of Jewish storytelling with live entertainment and dinner for adults and children, February 6th, 5:30 p.m. at Temple Sinai, Saratoga Springs, New York, 518-584-8730. And Northeast Solar in Hatfield, Massachusetts, helping Pioneer Valley residents live more sustainably with solar power for home, business, or farm. Keep solar local, northeast-solar.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. Number to call, 800-348-2551. Ray Graff here, and our guest is veterinarian Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Boy, Ron, the lines are really loaded today, so let's get right back to the phones. Ann in Ulster County. Ann.
Hello there, gentlemen.
Hello.
We have two cats. They'll be 17 years old in May, and we made them come in. They spent the summer outside, and I just let them do that because they could find a cool spot. But winter, I made them come in, and they're pulling out like lumps of hair. The floor is littered in the morning.
Oh, boy.
Is that a dietary problem, or would it be psychological? They don't seem to itch. I don't think it's fleas.
Wow. Well, Ron, this sounds like a food allergy, huh?
No, it doesn't. Because I would ask Ann, you did not mention, Ann, that there's anything wrong with the skin as far as any bald spots, any redness, any bleeding, any scratches. Is this just clumps of hair that they're pulling out, but you don't see any of those?
Yeah, well, they have bald spots where they pull the hair off. It's not sores. It's just no hair.
Oh, so there are bald spots. Well, then maybe it is psychological. I doubt that it's dietary.
They would both have psychological issues at the same time?
It is weird. It's hard to say whether one is copycatting the other, literally, or not. But dietary, it wouldn't have an impact on so short a time. I mean, a dietary deficiency would take longer than a week or two to manifest, I think. So the pulling out of the hairs, I would want to make sure, Anne, the first thing is that there's no fleas, that there's no parasites. Do you see them?
I never see them scratch. They don't never scratch.
Cats are sometimes not as obvious about relieving their itch from fleas as would be a dog. So what you want to do, Anne, first and foremost, is drag a flea comb through them and look for these little tiny black dots. They're smaller than a period, but they are visible, that when you wet them down and wait a few minutes will dissolve back into a reddish color. That's what we call flea dirt. Flea dirt is a euphemism for their excrement.
Fine.
And since a flea eats an animal's blood, that's what they poop out. So that's why it'll turn red. You need to find out if there's any fleas, Anne. That's the first thing I would think.
All right. Well, we give them cat food, and I also give them chicken. They like human food. So anything they want, they get.
Well, I don't think it's dietary. And as Ray points out, it is a little less common for two cats to be doing the same thing. So that's why I would think about fleas. I mean, I would put my money, I'll put my money on the fleas.
It's just sad looking, but otherwise they seem happy. You know,
it's real easy to address a flea problem these days, Aunt, if that's what it is. There's some real convenient things that you only have to use once a month, and you could either put them on topically or give them something orally, and some of these products will kill all adult fleas within 4 hours. It's pretty amazing. So go look into it.
Could I ask you how old a cat of 17 is in human terms?
I love this question.
Well, a cat that's 17 in human terms is, I would say, 83 years old.
83 years 84, old?
80, maybe 84.
Get those cats to an early bird buffet.
So a person being 80, what is our life expectancy? Is 80. And typical cat's life expectancy, I hope. So typical cat will go to 16.
Yeah.
So they're 16 and a half, 17. That's why I say 83, 85.
So it's all gravy
like
now.
That. Yeah, it's icing on the cake.
Some
of them will live to 20. Some of them will live to 19, 20. It's not unheard of, but it's like a cat living to 20 is like you or me getting to 100.
Yeah.
You know.
Except for pulling their hair out, they're just as beautiful as they were when they were little.
I think you might be biased, Dan.
Well, Ann, thanks for the call.
Thank you, too.
Bye. You're welcome. Take care.
Let's go over to Steve in Pownell, Vermont. Steve, you're on.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Hi, Steve.
I have a 8-year-old bulldog mix, and she's got like a boil on her chest. I just noticed it a couple days ago. Any idea about that?
An 8-year-old bulldog with a boil on her chest. What's a boil, Steve? What does it look like? What color? How big?
There's no color discoloration, but I can feel like it's a bump about the size of my hand. It feels like liquid underneath it.
Eek.
A size of your hand.
Yeah, it takes up maybe two of her nipples.
Zoinks.
It takes up two of her nipples?
Right.
Well, mammary cancer is the most common cancer in a dog, but it usually is not a fluid-filled thing. However, what makes mammary glands, secretion of milk. So it could be, I mean, conceivably a fluid-filled mammary tumor, but in all my years of vetting, I've never seen a fluid-filled mammary cancer. You need to take that dog to a vet. If there is fluid in there, you could put a needle in to see if truly that's what it is, because it might be something that maybe feels like fluid, it feels fluctuant, but it could be fatty, in which case it's a solid structure. And a needle could also tell if it's a solid structure, is it something to worry about or not. But a fluid-filled boil, I don't think of. Blister, I don't think of. Abscess is a possibility. Abscess is fluid-filled. But the dog with an abscess is usually acting sick, low energy. So you didn't say anything of her acting like that.
No.
I would take it to a vet, Steve. I can't tell over the phone.
Yeah, she's not in any pain. And like I said, I just noticed it within the last day or so.
Is she intact or was she spayed?
She's intact.
Well, especially being intact, Steve, I get her in, have the vet look at her just to make sure it's not something bad. As I say, mammary cancer is the most common cancer in a dog. Doesn't mean it's malignant, but it could be. And I check it out.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Steve. We appreciate the call. Our calling line, the number to call, as it were, is 800-348-2551. Ron Scharf is the vet. I'm your radio host, Ray Graff. Let's go to Corey in Averill Park. Hello, Corey.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. You're on.
All right. So I have two cats, and I have one litter box, and I'm pretty diligent about cleaning out the litter box. I do it every, you know, few days. But I noticed that the one cat always kind of goes to the bathroom right outside the litter box, and that doesn't matter. It could be a litter box that hasn't been cleaned out in a few days, or I could have just put brand new litter in. It seems like right away the one cat will kind of go outside of it, and then the other two seems like they might be participating both in the one litter box. So my question is there any way or method or suggestion about how to get both the cats to use to go to the bathroom in the litter box?
Yeah. So it could be several things, Corey. The first thing I would ask is the cat that's going outside the box old?
No, they're both about 7 years old.
Okay. So it's not as common, but cats can get arthritis, and sometimes the wall of the box makes it too uncomfortable for them to get in. So they want to get in, but it hurts them too much, so they go toward the box, but they don't go in the box. The second possibility, Corey, is that the cat doesn't like what the litter is. And what these cats can do is develop what's called a substrate preference. In other words, they do their business elsewhere than the box, and then they come to decide, you know, I like that place, that surface, better than what I see in the box. Now, why would they not like the litter? Well, several possibilities, Corey. First of all, it could be scented litter. A lot of cats don't like the scent. Number two, it could be a clayish litter, which has like kind of powder in the air that the cat doesn't like. Or it could be that it's an extremely fastidious cat, in which case, if it's not spotless or the other cat's business in that litter may be something that the cat doesn't like. So there are various things that it could be. Hard to get at the root of it over the phone, over the air in a couple of minutes, Corey, but those are the three things I'd look at.
Couldn't it be an interpersonal thing as well? Isn't it always standard to always have one extra cat box for the number of, in other words, if you have two cats, you have three cat boxes?
If there is an elimination problem, okay, which I was going to get to in this case.
Oh, sorry, I'm pushing you along.
One box for two cats is usually fine, but if there is an elimination disorder, you want to cover as many bases in addressing it as you can. And one of those, as I mentioned, you don't use scented litter. Number two, you don't use clay, but rather the clumping kind of litter. Number three, you give them different kinds of litter boxes and one more than the number of cats you have. So in other words, three boxes in your case. And sometimes some cats don't like it. I don't know that this would be the case with you, but a lot of people put the litter box in the laundry room, and then the cat early on is doing their business and they're minding their own business, and then the washing machine switches cycles, makes a racket, freaks out the cat, and they say, I'm not going in there. I don't think that that's your situation, Corey, because the cat goes to the box and just goes an inch shy of the box. So there's various things. You also want to do, just to be on the safe side, your due diligence, Corey, is to do your analysis just to make sure that there's no urinary tract infection. Sure, I agree. I doubt that there is. But I have seen many, many situations where it looked classic for a behavioral problem, and it was not. It was a physical. So just make sure it's not a urinary tract situation.
Corey, thanks a lot for the call. All right, Doctor, while we're on the topic of excrement, this email came in. This is from Nancy and Bob in Wilton. And they write, we recently rescued a 10-year-old intake male Springer Spaniel. He has an enlarged prostate, hip dysplasia, Lyme, but he has separation anxiety. The previous owner said he actually chewed his way out of a wire crate, that he was never crate trained. If we leave him for 2+ hours, even after walking him extensively prior, he urinates on the linoleum and then poops there as well. Good story, Nancy and Bob. There's more to come. He has urinated on the back of our love seat twice. What do you suggest to stop this? The vet did say his prostate is pressing on his bladder, spine, and rectum. They suggest neutering him for all sorts of reasons, but he's clearly upset when we leave and ecstatic when we return. Suggestions until we get him fixed. Nancy and Bob, never write again. Go ahead.
So I totally agree with your vet that neutering him would be the first and most important thing to do, number one. Number two, I do not think that it accounts for the whole situation about what's going on, that there is some kind of psychological thing going on with the separation anxiety. Now, Nancy, what you best are the odds of the most success are to combine behavior modification with medication. Okay. Now, sometimes the behavior modification alone will be enough to address a separation anxiety problem, but oftentimes you need at least temporarily to use a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, otherwise known as Prozac, so that you can address some of the stress that that dog is feeling. You know, the dog spends how many years of its life, 9.5 years, having one situation. Maybe the owner was there all the time, and now all of a sudden you take the, him in, and you might have to leave to go to work or have a life otherwise. So you need to acclimate the dog to the situation of being alone, and you also need to decouple your leaving cues with your actually leaving. So in other words, the things that you do before you leave, you get your keys, you get your cone on, you make your coffee, etc. You have to do those things many times without leaving, okay? So that the dog first learns that seeing those cues doesn't mean that they have to start, he has to start ramping up in his anxiety. Then the next thing you do is to try to desensitize him to your stepping out the door and then almost immediately stepping back in so that he could learn that, okay, owner leaving the dog isn't that much of a problem. Then you have to, little by little, in baby steps, you need to turn the car on, go back in, you know, to reassure them that, oh, the car getting turned on doesn't necessarily mean mom's going away. And this takes months. This takes a long time, and a lot of people do not have the wherewithal, the motivation, or the time to do these things. But it's always more successful rather than just throwing a fistful of pills at someone. I mean, take a person, you know, if we have psychological problems, you're better off successfully dealing with them by talking through the problems accompanied by medication than by just taking the pills and not necessarily dealing with things. So that's, in a nutshell, something that usually takes an hour or two to go over with a person, trying to figure out ways to deal with it. But you could talk to your vet. Behavior modification is something that is often what is needed in these kinds of situations. And separation anxiety is not unusual. It's very common.
Nancy and Bob, of course we would like you to write again. My producer wants me to let you know that, of course, we love your emails about poop and pee. And so let's go back to the phones. Jackie and Beacon. Jackie, you're on.
Oh, hi. I have two cats that have feline herpes, and I'm moving just across town, not too far, but I always try not to stress them out as I understand the virus can become activated when they're stressed. Do you have any advice for me?
Yes. Okay. So depending upon when you're moving, Jackie, it's kind of like what I told the last caller about behavior modification would be to acclimate the cats to being in the car. Okay, and to make it something that is a pleasant experience for them, and also acclimate them to having the smell of the new place that you're going to, and acclimate them, you know, take something, take a sweatshirt that you've had in the new place for a while, bring it home, let them smell it, and then there are things that you could do, such as a synthetic pheromone that I've mentioned many times called Feelaway, F-E-L-I-W-A-Y, that you can put in the new house so that that sometimes will take a little of the edge off. And I'm just trying to think, acclimating them to the car, acclimating them to the smell of the house, the Feelaway. Tranquilizers if you need it, okay? Usually you don't use tranquilizers every day. That would be more for the day of the move than anything else.
Is this a problem of transport, or is this a problem once you get to the new place, Jackie?
No, I don't think it's the transportation. The last time they had an outbreak, it was really bad, and one of the cats almost lost an eye.
Yikes.
Wow. So you could try an antiviral. Jackie,
well, that's kind of what I was wondering.
Yeah, they're antiviral medications. We usually don't use them because the things that cats get, the herpes virus you're talking about is a common one that is included in the vaccine that we call the distemper, and feline viral rhinotracheitis or something is the scientific name, but it is a herpes virus. It is upper respiratory in cats. It can cause corneal problems, and that's what you're dealing with. It sounds like you have a particularly virulent form of it in your cat. I would ask your vet about possibility of using antivirals, at least for the first while, you know, the first few weeks or something. And if it's that bad, that might be worthwhile doing. Usually it's not worth using antivirals for the typically lesser manifestations of that.
Can I ask another question related to that?
Yeah, we have about a minute before the break. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Ray. So if I were to introduce another cat that does not have herpes, you just said that the distemper vaccine has the immunization for herpes, or is there no immunization for? Oh, really?
Yes, all cat distemper vaccines that I know include that two upper respiratory viruses, the herpes virus and a calici, as well as the distemper itself, panleukopenia. So, yes, that should be something that you could protect from the other cat.
Okay, thank you very much.
Jackie, good luck. Thanks so much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Ron Scharf is our guest, and we'll be back with the home stretch on this Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop.
Support for WAMC comes from Pave, Tile, Wood, and Stone. Using French artisan techniques to manufacture pre-finished oak floors, decorative and terracotta tile, and importing aged French limestone, showroom by appointment and online, pavetile.com. Spate Consulting and Coaching, Shelburne Falls. More than 20 years of working with leaders and teams committed to purposeful change. See it whole and move it forward, dlspecht.com. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Custom-designed panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly passive and solar design elements, noble-home.net. Lori Stillwell, CPA PC. Providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond, stillwellcpa.com. And Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York. Providing eyeglasses, contact lenses, and eye exams since 1953. Now accepting appointments for patients with flexible health spending accounts, sheehyopticians.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551, the number. Ray Graff here. Right across the table is Dr. Ron Scharf. It is our Pets and Vets edition. Hi, Ron. Thanks for waving. Peggy in Eastern New York. Peggy, you're on.
Yes, thank you. We have a problem with a dog, a Tibetan Terrier, that's five, and our one cat, Molly. We have Bella and Lucy, who are sisters, that are 6 years old. When he came into the house, he absolutely loved them, but he hates Molly, and he will not. Molly has to stay on a certain chair in the living room, or he goes after, he doesn't bite her, but he will growl and go after her until she gets back in that chair.
Ha! Whoa.
Love it. Could I borrow your dog maybe for my kids? for a night?
I know. He will not let, and he goes back into the living room and checks out whether she's off that chair.
Wow.
And this has been going on for 5 years, so it's not. His name is Santino. And, Ray, I know you're going to say make him an offer. He can't refuse.
Hey, Santino, what I'm suggesting to you is get on YouTube right away. All right, Ron, what do you think?
Go viral, yeah. Is this an intact Santino, Peggy?
No. No, he's
and
a dick.
Has Molly done anything? Like, who came first, the dog or the cat?
Oh, the cat. She was with us for years before Santino.
And did Molly do anything? Did she steal Santino's food?
No, nothing like that. She might have. I mean, she's gray and very fluffy, and Molly and Lucy and Bella are, tortoise-shelled. I don't know. Does he think she's a big mouse? I don't know what he thinks.
Genius.
But
that is exactly mouse. What. Well, Ron wow. thought that maybe the dog thought it was a sheep.
Well, I thought that the note that we got before we started speaking with you was that, Peggy, the dog was herding. The dog was herding the cat, H-E-R-D. So I was wondering, are we talking a border collie, an Australian shepherd, a Sheltie? Tibetan Terrier. Yeah. So.
Oh, he herds, definitely.
He herds. So.
Maybe he thinks it's a Yeti.
I think you need to dissuade him from doing that, Peggy. You need to camp out. In that room where that Molly's chair is, and then do something to the dog that
I
would
have
be...
that little orange spray thing that it just goes, psh, it makes that noise.
Well, that's that might help, although that could also scare the cats. So, you know, that's commonly the spray thing is often used to talk cats out of doing something like, you know, jumping up on your kitchen counter or whatever. That might, maybe that'll do it if it's not bothering Molly, that is.
No, it. I have used it, but he will, I mean, it's amazing how he has a sixth sense about her getting down from that chair. And now I feed her in the chair. She has her food in the chair. I have the chair turned towards the window. She gets a lot of light, and she gets, you know, and I crack open the window and all that. And he will, at times, when I'm near Molly, he will stay next to me and just look at her without any problem.
Wow.
He does not go after her food at all. He doesn't go, and he doesn't bite her or anything, but, oh, you should hear him.
I think when, I'm sorry, you were saying?
No, but he really goes bananas when she gets down from that chair. And then the poor thing goes and hides in the closet when he's not around.
Yeah, I think that that you should not be enabling his behavior, his antisocial behavior, by, you know, putting the chair, turning the chair to the window, and et cetera, feeding the cat in the chair. I think you need to talk him into that this is not his territory to determine all the rules, you determine the rules. And the only way to do that is by being present every time he's being like this to Molly. And to do that, unfortunately, means you have to camp out there to some degree, or keep him isolated for the time that she needs to eat, to walk around, to stretch herself, so that he realizes that if he's not following the rules of the house, he's not going to get run of the house because he's not deserving it. Personally, that's how I would do it. I'm kind of a hardliner sometimes.
Yeah, that would take a long time to teach a dog that,
though,
right?
Yeah, it takes a long time.
Well, the thing is when he's outside even, which he goes out a lot, we have an invisible fence. Absolutely, if he hears me say, Molly, you should
unbelievable.
Hear him. He runs to the back door and starts barking like crazy. He wants in because he knows it's like she's his slave, or I don't know.
And he's normal in every other respect. He's a nice dog.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
So with Molly, he's a little Hitler. So
Bella is his best friend. The one girl cat, they sleep together, play together, run outside. They do everything together.
No,
loves cats, loves Lucy, but just doesn't like Molly.
All right, so what you have to do is you have to reinforce him being social with Molly.
Uh-huh.
In other words, you have to not give him treats for anything other than that behavior that you want him to learn, okay? So he shouldn't get a treat, he shouldn't get a toy, he shouldn't get a plaything, he shouldn't even get food. His meals, unless and until he has demonstrated that he is being okay with Molly.
But negative conditioning takes a lot longer than positive, right?
Yes, yes. Negative conditioning is way out of fashion, and it has been for 10 years now or longer, that, you know, no trainer is going to teach negative conditioning or negative training anymore. It's all positive conditioning.
Yeah.
That's why I'm mentioning that dog should not get anything good until he has demonstrated that he's being okay and social.
And should I sit
Molly.
Near Molly and sit there next to her and just let him come over and... See, when I'm there, he doesn't do a thing.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. If you can sit next to her and he comes over and he's not growling, then he could get a treat. But not if she's in the chair. I mean, if she's in the chair, then he's not going to growl.
Right.
Because she's doing what he wants.
Oh, you're right.
So,
yes.
So that is not, you're on the right track, but it would have to be you rewarding him, you setting the situation for success. You're trying to persuade him that his best interest is in being nice to Molly.
Yeah. I think it's starting to affect her psychologically.
Yeah. Oh, I don't blame her.
She's in the closet.
I don't blame her.
And she's not coming out of the closet until he's upstairs at night, and she knows somehow that he is asleep. You know, he's up there for the night.
So what you could do is isolate him for part of the time so that she could have run of the house, so she doesn't feel all shut in, number one. Number two, have a sweatshirt that Molly lays on a lot and put that in the room with him that you isolate him to, so he gets acclimated to her scent.
Yeah.
And then also, just like they make that cat pheromone, there's a dog pheromone that may or may not help, but it wouldn't hurt to try this DAP, it's called, to put some DAP in the house or in that area, so that anything that you do, there's also some non-pharmaceutical anti-anxiety medications. They're not medications, actually. They're what you call nutraceuticals that you could try. One is called Anxitane, A-N-X-I-T-A-N-E or T-A-I-N-E.
Yeah.
It's not a dramatic thing like a drug would be, but if you do all these little things, the pheromone, the nutraceutical Anxitane, the behavior modification, the hope is that they would all add up to something that's a good outcome.
Peggy, thank you for the call.
Good luck.
Oh, thank you. Thank
Unusual
you so
problem.
Much.
It kind of took a sad turn there. It's distressing.
Yeah.
Let's go over to Mary in Pittsfield. Mary, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have a question about our, she's about 4 years old, our Weimaraner. She's a very active dog. It's been about a month that she had cut her paw while we were, I think, running through the woods. And it just sort of seemed to, you know, heal itself as any normal, it was a pretty shallow wound. But I've noticed the past few weeks that it started to form an abscess. And it seems like it's getting bigger and now even sort of more red and pink around it.
Okay. So there's two possibilities, Mary. It's either a foreign body, in other words, something in there that the body's trying to fight off unsuccessfully, but valiantly.
Like a piece of glass or something?
Yeah, yeah, a piece of glass, a splinter, a thorn, something like that, number one. Or it's a MRSA kind of thing. It could be a bacterium that is resistant to most antibiotics. Now, that's not likely. I would go with the foreign body theory way before I would go with the MRSA, but the MRSA, what you need to do is do a culture and sensitivity, Mary. And to do a culture and sensitivity that you could trust, the dog needs to be off antibiotics a week, at least 5 days.
Okay. She hasn't been on any, we haven't even treated it because it seems like it was getting better. But,
oh.
But and I've been, yeah, it was kind of a cut that she, you know, that was sort of just going away on its own.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, it wasn't bothering her and it hasn't seemed to bother her, but just looking at it physically, the past, you know, I've been kind of looking at it, tracking it over
the
past couple of weeks, and it seems like it's getting worse.
So the first thing I would do is a culture and sensitivity, and then when you find out what bacterium it is, you find out what the best antibiotic to use. And when you use the best antibiotic, if she does not respond, then you have to start looking around for a foreign body. An abscess, if that's truly what it is, you need to incise it so that the pus has a chance to get out. Abscesses,
yeah, because it looks like it's pretty filled.
Yeah. You need to establish drainage, Mary, and it's what vets called I&D, incision and drainage.
Okay.
Sometimes they need a drain put in there, you know, so the hole doesn't close over too quickly. So the first thing is establish drainage, take a sample for the culture, put her on the right antibiotic, and if a week or two goes by and it's not that much better, you have to start doing a hunting expedition, finding out what's in there. That's it.
Okay.
It could be an X-ray, could be an exploratory.
Gotcha. Do we have to do that? And should we take her to the vet to have that done?
Yes,
or
absolutely.
Do we do it? Okay.
No,
okay.
Do not try this at home.
Mary, thanks a lot for the call. And over to Sandy in Pittsfield, Mass. Sandy, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about my cat. At Thanksgiving time, she had to have surgery for bladder stones. And the vet had put her on a prescription diet for the bladder stones, and it's rather expensive, and my dog likes to eat it. So I was wondering if the over-the-counter prescription, or not prescription, for urinary would be as good, or if I should stick with the prescription.
Okay. So a couple questions, Sandy. First of all, do you know what kind of stone it was?
I do not know what kind of stone
it was. Not to worry. Second of all, is your cat, is this a male or a female, by the way?
Female.
Okay, good. That's better.
Why is that?
Because male cats get blocked way easier than female cats
do.
Now, are you having her eat canned food, Sandy, or dry kibble?
Dry food. She's on a Dry Hill Science diet prescription for urinary.
Okay, so the first thing is that it's way better for a cat with a history of bladder stones to be fed canned food than dry food.
Okay.
Number one. I would never feed a dry food, an over-the-counter dry food, to any cat, male or female, ever again who has had a history of bladder stones.
Oh, okay.
And even with the prescription food, the canned is better than the dry.
Huh.
But if you have to feed that cat dry, some cats, for instance, refuse to eat canned food. It's weird.
She's not big on canned food.
She won't eat canned food?
She doesn't really like canned food.
Okay, well, in that case... the answer is one that you will not like. I would never feed an over-the-counter dry food to a cat with a history of bladder stones. The dry food, the only one that I would use would be either Hill's, which they make one called S-O, S-slash-O. There are other companies also. I'm sorry, is it S-O? No, the Royal Canin. Royal Canin is S-O, and Hill's is either C-D or... Or
CD
SD.
Is the one that's on.
Yeah. The CD, that's a great food. I would not feed over-the-counter dry food. Now, sometimes you can get away with canned food after a few months go by and they're doing fine, and check the urine every few months just to make sure that they're not forming it to feed an over-the-counter canned food. Once in a while you can get away with. Okay, but I would monitor that urinalysis periodically.
All right, Sandy, thanks so much for the telephone call. Move it along here. We're almost done. And Nicholas in Rotterdam. Nicholas.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a bulldog boxer mix, about 7 years old, and from chewing bones, he's broke the bottom fang. And I'm curious if that'll get infected.
Okay.
The answer is likely yes. However, sometimes if it's a fracture, then the answer is definitely yes. It can get infected. That's a direct route into the bloodstream from the outside world. And who knows what kind of stuff dogs put in their mouths. You know what I'm talking about. But there's an also possibility, Nicholas, if it were a gradual thing. That dogs that gradually grind their teeth down to nubs oftentimes may not have a direct communication to that pulp chamber. So if it was a traumatic fracture, then yes, I would definitely get that tooth out. And if it was a gradual thing, then it's more up in the air. Did it break?
Doesn't seem to be in any pain or anything. I'm just curious, and I appreciate your advice.
Well, was it a sudden thing that he broke it, or was it a gradual thing that took many months or years?
No, it was a sudden thing.
Well, then I would get that tooth out, because just because he has not shown any problem doesn't mean that it can't happen. And so it might not happen for a month or a half a year or something, but there can be a bacteria that'll go up into that broken tooth, into the bloodstream, and then look for a happy place to colonize. It could be a heart valve, could be a kidney.
Yikes.
And it would be better for that to not happen.
Very good. Thank you very much for your advice.
Sure thing, Nicholas.
And I'll take it to the dentist, right?
Okay.
Take it to the vet.
Thanks, Nicholas. We appreciate the call. Well, I think we're about done here, Ron. We don't really have time to take another call unless you want to go really quickly.
I will go as quickly as possible.
All right. Well, then we'll go 15 seconds for the question, 15 seconds for the answer. You ready? Lori in Saratoga Springs, this is the lightning round. You have 15 seconds. Go.
I won't use any adjectives.
All right. Thanks, doctor. My question is, I have a maybe 14 to 16 months old
Oh, well, that was really quick because we lost her. Oh, yeah. Lori, I'm so sorry. Your connection went. You were on hold.
Well, you told her to be fast.
Well, Ron, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. Well, sorry, Lori. We'll get you next time. Ron Scharf, well done, sir.
Running okay for a small dog. Yes, long distance running is okay for a small dog if they are acclimated to it and they are in good shape. I think that was Lori's question.
God, you're the psychic veterinarian. Well done. All right, Ron Scharf, thanks a lot. The Animal Hospital of Niskayuna is where you can find Dr. Ron Scharf. Support comes from East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massage for couples and individuals, eastheaven.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working to permanently preserve the natural, scenic, and recreational resources of the Lake George region since 1988, lglc.org. The Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York, open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sunday, 12 to 5, hydecollection.org. And The Linda, WAMC's performing arts studio, presenting a range of programming for the arts and community, thelinda.org. Thanks again to Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Your calls were answered by Paulette Ryder. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow's show, I don't know what it is. It says it's the Bird Show, but we did that last week, so I think the script is wrong. It'll be an exciting program for you and a surprise for me. Tune in.